KPCW News Time now, 8:16. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. In the studio with me now, Park City's chief building official, Chad Rue. Good morning, Chad.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. So I haven't seen you in a while. Maybe I've just missed you, but so let's talk. I mean, how does 2015 look compared to prior years?
2015, as far as projects, the size of projects, we started getting larger projects. And, not as many of the small projects, but I would say more larger projects as far as, full remodels of homes, tearing down of existing homes, and rebuilding on the footprint of that home just because the land and the location is so valuable. And we're seeing that Main Street's kind of calmed down a little bit, which is kind of nice. I know for a lot of the merchants, we still have a couple projects that are plugging away, and also a couple that 632 and 692 that are still kind of moving at their own pace, but at least they're not impacting the Main Street as much as they could be.
Yeah. Have we made any changes in terms of how we deal with slow-dragging developments in the future?
That's a tough one. Since we're not home rule, it's a real tough one because we have to go with the state legislation as far as the permits. Every 180 days, if they have an inspection done, they can continue the project. Unlike other resort communities that are home rule, they have a 30-day period that every 30 days there has to be an inspection done. Unfortunately, we're stuck at that point. It's 180 days for an inspection.
Hmm. So can they just call you for an inspection? I mean, do they have to actually have something to inspect?
They do. They do have to have something to inspect. If they call for an inspection, which a couple of them have, and there's nothing to inspect, no work to be done, then we don't even write it as an inspection.
Okay, so yep. The time keeps counting at that point.
Yep, because it's critical that they move forward for the economic needs of the city.
Hmm. So did you have to pull anything? I mean, as a result of them not meeting the 100, or everyone was able to meet that 180-day?
The ones on Main Street that are moving slow, they're just barely meeting it. They're keeping tabs on it. There's some residential projects, though, that have expired because they haven't pulled the inspections.
And what does that mean, then?
Basically, they have to start all over again on the permit process. They have to pay the permit fees, and that's one of the reasons why, during the recession, we had a lot of excavated sites with foundations only. The neighbors were upset, hey, this looks awful, it looks like a war zone. And so we started requiring full permit fees, even if they wanted to do foundation only, to show that the owners vested in the community to make sure the project moves forward, because there was a lot, more that they could lose as far as money wise versus before. It used to be only a $75 permit fee for foundations. Then they just leave it there.
All right. Well, let's take a look at some of the building numbers. And I mean, can you put some numbers to what you're looking at this?
Yeah. Probably the big thing is for the month. We surpassed the 100 million. Mark in valuations, which is pretty great. We don't collect off of valuations. We have our own permit fee schedule. So if we did collect off of valuations, this year would have been one of the top years for sure. But what this shows is that the projects are getting bigger, like I mentioned before, and not as many small little remodel projects.
Yeah. How has Park City's Mountain Resorts projects helped in all of this?
They've helped quite a bit. And the beautiful thing about them is they're moving forward, they're moving fast, and it looks like they're going to be ready for ski season, the gondola and the ski hut as well. And they've been trying to minimize traffic in the Main Street area by using the front side of the mountain over by the ski parking area, going up that side instead of up King Road on most of the projects, which is we appreciate.
Yeah. So you inspect the restaurants, or do you actually go and inspect this side of the gondola?
Yeah. Yeah. So the gondola, we made a deal that the state transit board will inspect the gondola itself, but we'll inspect everything else outside of that. So we inspect the ski hut, we're inspecting the platforms, and the transportation board, or part of the UDOT, is inspecting the gondola.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about, you had mentioned to me that you're going to be coming up with some kind of ordinance, and this would just be for city, for wildlife mitigation? What does that look like?
Wildfire. Yeah, mm-hmm. So what it is last year we started moving forward to take a look at the WUI code, which is Wildland Urban Interface. It's a fire code as far as how structures are built and, to make sense with Park City. We elected not to, at that point, adopt the actual code because we thought it would be a kind of unfunded mandate. There's a lot of extra crossing the T's, dotting the I's, and for us to inspect it would be pretty tough. So we held off a year. We've been doing research, and we just came back, Kurt and myself, from the Colorado Wildfire Mitigation Council, and they had players from Washington State, California, Oregon, Canada, and also Colorado and Montana, and looked at what other resort communities were doing. And I think that we've kind of come up with a plan that will institute part of the WUI code, Wildland Urban Interface Code, on new structures. And then nightly rentals will require that they do some fire mitigation around the structures. And then also any large permit projects where somebody's coming in for a permit to do a remodel of a structure, they'll have to meet the wildfire mitigation plan, and we're still putting that in place. But taking a look at it, it's not if Park City will burn, it's when at this point. After the conference was pretty enlightening, we have a lot of growth fuels that are around now that weren't around at the turn of the century. If you take a look at a lot of the historic photos, you'll see that hillsides that had no trees have a lot of trees now. And then on top of that, we've added homes. And a lot of people think that, hey, we have sprinklers in these homes. They won't burn. No, they'll burn. What the sprinklers are there for in the homes is to get you out safe so you're not inundated with smoke. It's just to get you out. The structure may still burn.
So would this apply to all areas in town?
Probably the meadows it won't apply to because it's pretty flat, more of the deciduous aspen trees. What we start looking at, though, is the hillsides, Deer Valley, even parts of Old Town. There's a huge concern.
Yeah. Mm. But like Thanes and Park Meadows, Prospect, or those areas would...
Yeah, they'd probably be
exempt,
you know, until you start getting into areas where they have a little bit of the hillside or they're starting to move up, yeah.
Okay. Well, speaking of fire, of course, Snyderville, I should say Summit County Council for the Snyderville Basin approved a wood-burning appliance ban. Is Park City thinking of something similar?
I think we are. And I think the route is that we'll probably just follow ditto the county code. It makes sense. It's a good step in the right direction. And, there's been a lot of proof as far as, hey, the amount of smoke that's emitted. You know, if everyone was to burn their wood-burning fireplace here in Park City, wrong conditions, we'd have a little inversion and it just wouldn't be pleasant. So there's some thoughts as far as different routes to go, such as maybe a buyout program. Is one thought, and that's where you, in order for a new structure to have a wood-burning fireplace, you would have to buy permits from existing structures, and that you'd have to have two permits from existing structures to have your one. And then what takes place is on the units that just got bought out, they would have to convert to natural gas. So it's letting at market price, reducing the number of wood-burning appliances that we have.
So we wouldn't be the first resort to do this. You were telling me that Telluride already institutes such a ban?
Yeah, Telluride Mountain Village did the same thing, and it was kind of an EPA mandate that they did it because they had such a problem with smoke. And it kind of went on the market value. And it works really well because homeowners that had these appliances could sell it and make money, to convert over natural gas, and it's a reduction. And the last I checked, before the economy crashed over there, they were selling for pretty close to about $100,000
for one permit.
For one permit.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
What about, I mean, would there be exemptions when I think about the large hotel parcels still to be developed at the base of Park City Mountain Resort and Deer Valley? I mean, a lodge without a wood-burning fireplace just doesn't seem, I mean, maybe it's the wave of the future, but certainly not the wave of what people have come to expect in a resort.
Yeah. You know, and this is America, we always put it. So they could probably do it. They would just have to end up going and doing a buyout later on if they go that route. Now, this is a moratorium at this place at this time. And so what would take place is the next stepping stones would be to, hey, a buyout program or a elimination program possibly as well.
So when does that come before City Council?
You know, I'm not sure. I know that Matt Abbott's working on it with the county, and I know it's going to be here in the future.
All right. And also coming up after you, we'll be talking with Bruce Erickson. He's been named as the new full-time planning director, but we've also hired a new community development director. So how does the CDD, community development director, work with the building department?
Basically, this position is going to be over building, engineering, planning, and the transportation planning directors. And this person will help coordinate. There was a lot of outcry that, you know, in planning and building and engineering as well, we say no a lot. And there was a lot of outcry from the contracting community that said, hey, if you say no, who do we go to? You know, and you guys get together as a group because, you know, you're kind of self-managing. And you say no, but we don't like that, hey, even though you said no, and then you met with other team managers and you guys said no, that we want to talk to somebody else. And the only other person above us was Diane Foster and Matt Dias. So this person kind of comes in and helps, will help with that as far as mediating on those issues. And also if there's any precedent projects moving forward that is interest of the community or the city, this person will help ensure that that project moves forward.
So you would make a recommendation as the building department official, and then it's up to Ann,
yeah,
Laurent to make a final decision?
Yeah.
If there was a problem with the decision?
Exactly. That's kind of how we see it progressing at this point. And I think that it's going to be a good bet. She brings a lot of skills and expertise to the table.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I don't think so at this point.
Okay, Chad, thanks for coming in.
Okay, hey, thank you.
That's Park City Chief Building Official Chad Root. It's 8:29 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Well, as we've reported, Park City Municipal has named Ann Laurent of Los Alamos, New Mexico, as the new Community Development Director for Park City, and Bruce Erickson to remain on as the Permanent Planning Director. Bruce Erickson joins me in the studio along with Park City Assistant City Manager Matt Dias. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Matt, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about Ann. I mean, she doesn't start for what, another 4 weeks or so?
Yeah, another couple of weeks. We're really, really excited. Ann's currently the Community and Economic Development Director in Los Alamos, New Mexico. She comes to us as a professional architect. She has professional project management, and she appears to be someone that we think is going to fit in great with our culture. She just did a wonderful job in the interview process and has a wonderful resume and has a lot of professional and technical experience that we think is going to be complementary to the community development team that we've organized.
Yeah, so had she not applied the first time around then?
That's correct. Yeah. She has she's frequented Park City and Salt Lake with her family for a number of years. It's always been a very appealing place to her. And much like myself, when I came here, she actually indicated she wasn't looking professionally. She was very happy where she was, but this place has a special place in her heart, so she was interested.
Yeah, and why do you think she rose to the top? Because I mean, she was one of, I think, three finalists.
Indeed. Well, there's a lot of reasons. I think the first is we just thought personally and professionally she was a wonderful fit for that team. Ann appears to be someone who's very, very talented professionally. She's an accredited, certified project management professional and has gone through all of the training that entails to reach her accreditation. So she has very, very nice technical skills. She's a LEED certified architect, and so she's also been a professional not in government. And we thought that was nice because she's been someone who's been on the other side of the fence, as someone who has had to pull a permit on her own for a project or on behalf of a client. And then finally, she appears to us as just an implementer, someone who wasn't coming in with their own bias or their own, you know, particular vision or their own way of doing things. She seemed very, very collaborative, and we thought that would be a nice fit for our culture and our community and very in tune with who we are.
Yeah. So you're probably part of the discussion in terms of why Park City thinks it needs a community development director, a planning director now, and an economic development director. I mean, certainly Anne's serving as two of those positions in her current role.
Indeed. I don't think it's any secret. All you really have to do is look outside and you see some of the pressures that we have in the community. You know, the economy has come roaring back. And some of this is responsive. We attempt to be an adaptive, flexible organization, and we were hearing from the community and from the mayor and from the council that this would be a strategic sort of additive approach to this team. And we ran it through the budget process last year, and it was, you know, pretty much overwhelmingly supported. And so we intend to add some additional resources to this team. We were looking for a collaborator, someone who's going to build consensus and someone who's going to listen, but someone who's also very, very competent and has the technical skills. And when we were evaluating the individual, it was nice that at that time, we were already having discussions with Bruce, and so we were able to say, you know, who can balance working with the city engineer, the chief building official, and a planning director? And it was nice to know once we had Bruce and his skill set to match that with Ann and the others.
So was there a disconnect then between those four departments? Because we're including transportation planning.
Right. Well, transportation planning is sort of a new one in that area, and I wouldn't call it a disconnect. I would just say, you know, given the pressure in our community, given what we're hearing from the citizens about internal coordination, about being more responsive to the public, about mitigating some of these impacts of our success. I think for the first time, we're really hearing these calls that we don't want to be a victim of our own success. And so we felt the response to that was to enhance our collaboration, was to enhance our coordination and step it up a little.
So we won't necessarily see, say, Jonathan Weidenhammer move over to maybe the sustainability side of things. We'll keep him on as economic development director?
I think for now, absolutely. You know, Jonathan and his team do a wonderful job. And I think they're coming into this eyes wide open as well and seeing this as a really neat opportunity to sort of knit together these different aspects of our organization.
Okay. So congratulations to you, Bruce. Did you want a full-time job?
Thank you, Leslie. I had a full-time job. Now I have two full-time jobs. And it's pretty nerve-wracking when you say it's permanent. But, I will retire eventually, and we're looking down the road.
Retire with your private firm planning?
You know, the city is a full-time job, and no shortage of night meetings and no shortage of long days. That's going to keep me pretty busy for the next 5 years.
So were you working for someone? I was thinking
no, I
you
was
had your own.
I had my own firm, Four Mountain Advisors, and consulting to ski areas across the country. Now we're going to take on the job here in Park City.
All right. So just you wrap whatever business up that you had and...
There's some small folks that are going to call me every once in a while, but it's certainly not going to be the Vales of the world.
Okay. So how do you see this working with a new community development director?
Well, I like to think of it as, quote-unquote, the Pentagon. There are five separate skill sets that are going to come together and try and protect the community. Planning has a job to do. We have a 500-page book of rules and 25 years of mistakes and perceived errors. So that's the burden we come together with. Engineering's got 30 years worth of things to fix. Economic development's got to look 30 years forward. And so when Ann comes on board here in a couple of weeks, she's sort of the fifth corner of the Pentagon and will help us with a bunch of projects that we need to get done.
Yeah. Well, you were here back in 2003, and that was when we let our community development director go. I mean, what's changed?
First of all, skill set's changed. Let me give you an example. Between us and the building department and the engineering department, our technology is probably from that era, 2000, 2003. And there are better systems out there, and none of us really, one, have the skill set, or two, the time to implement a coordinated building permit, planning permit process through the electronic system. And none of us have the time right now to put together a better process for talking to the public through those systems. I don't Twitter. So, I'm a little behind the times on that, and we need a system to get that done.
So that's going to happen?
I don't know if it's going to be Twitter. I'm not a big fan of the Twitter wasteland, but something's going to happen, and we've reached out. We've actually looked at a system that looks like the reverse 911 so that you could get a notification on your mobile phone of an application coming through that you were interested in. We've taken a look at Denver's historic districts, and they actually have registered neighborhood associations that get notified on historic projects just the same way you would if you were a member of adjoining property.
I just found out that reverse 911 is a trademark term.
I won't use it then.
Use automate. I know. I got a letter in the mail. So you have to say automated phone messaging system.
Okay. Automatic phone messaging system. Fine.
Let's talk a little bit about just what we've seen happen last week. The city council considering carbon reduction as one of its critical priorities. How does that impact what you do?
Well, we had two critical priorities, and that's transportation and housing. And in my book, they're all rolled into one. They are all interlinked and interconnected, and it's almost impossible to separate. So they probably did a little bit more defining than they did adding. You can't do protect against climate change, and you can't do some of these other things without having proper housing in the right locations and a proper transportation system that gets people around. So I think, you know, it adds to the workload, of course, but it's already part of the conversation. They're just defining what they want.
Yeah, but are you going to have to, like, calculate now trips of concrete loads and how that,
We do some of that now. That's kind of intuitive as part of the planning process. Is what does this really mean? Do we really want all these trucks running up and down the hill? And you've seen mitigation strategies ever since we started pulling soil off of Empire Pass, where we specified the type of truck and the age of the truck and the emissions of the truck and the type of brakes for the truck coming down the hill and all those things. So it's part of our protocol generally. I just think we need to raise its visibility.
Okay.
And if I'll just add to that, I think that for the community's sake, they'll see in the next month and two, staff will be coming back to council with sort of a work plan, a table of contents, if you will, or a blueprint of the way we would approach addressing this particular request and these needs in our community. And it'll have a host of measures and lots of opportunities for the public to engage and provide us feedback on that plan. And I would say this is going to be very, very similar to how we approach the transportation and housing challenges in our community. As the individuals are now coming before council, or those departments are coming before council once a month, they have, you know, an ongoing plan with a series of studies and implementation steps. And I think we're going to try to use the same trajectory here.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your impressions of last week's joint planning meeting. Again, that was on housing and transportation. Are we talking a certain kind of housing? Are we talking about housing for school teachers and, you know, mid-level professionals? Or are we talking about housing for, you know, people that make $9 an hour?
I think we're talking the full suite of housing opportunities for folks that are in the middle income or the lower echelons of our average income around here. I don't think we're targeting any one specific issue. I think our mission at the Joint Planning Commission was kind of blur the line between city and county on this particular issue. The Canyons Village of Park City ski areas combined has an obligation for employee housing. Park City Mountain Resort has an obligation for employee housing. Some of the opportunities out there at the junctions don't have any requirements for employee housing at all. So we're blurring the lines on this particular issue in an attempt to solve the problem all the way up from the $9 an hour person to the mid-level teacher, school teacher, radio personality.
Yeah. So where do you start? I mean, is it just brainstorming ideas, or do you bring in the property owners to talk about?
No, I'm kind of tired of starting over. I think we've got a significant amount of research already. The folks at City Hall have done the studies. Stauffer has done a considerable amount of research and been on the project quite a while. So we're not going to start over. We're going to take the information we have. We're going to put it together. We're going to have some smart people on our teams both look at it and see if we can come up with a solution. I think our biggest problem is looking for the right location. We can't just move folks away from their services. All that does is add cars on the road, which ultimately leads to more carbon emissions. And that's why I think all three of those goals of the city council are absolutely interconnected.
Yeah. But is there any land that's even affordable? I mean, the city doesn't own that much in terms of putting housing on. I mean, you really need to start talking with some large landowners.
Well, and I think that's why we're trying to blur the lines with the county. The county has some requirements, and they want to make sure that folks have access to the city services. And it's not going to really matter to us as long as it's in the right location in order to achieve all three of those goals: transportation, climate, energy, housing.
All right. So we could see maybe like a trifecta then. I mean, of the property owner, Summit right. County, and Park City in terms of getting something developed.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Anything else? I mean, in terms of your impressions from last week's meeting?
No, it was a really good meeting. I think both sides came at it as a level playing field and are going to try and work together to try and solve the issues. You probably could not have seen the distinction between the city and the county the way they approached the issues. They were both articulate and knowledgeable.
All right. And then when does Ann show up for her first day of work?
Her first day of work's October 14th. So you'll look to – we'll probably make sure we have her on with you to share some time with the community, and we'll be meeting folks, you know, various business associations, trade associations, and community meetings around town.
All right. Matt Abbott, Bruce Erickson, thanks.
Thanks.
KPCW
News Time now, 8:44. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Well, joining me now in the studio with United Healthcare, I've got Sherry Giles to tell us about a couple of important meetings. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what's going on?
So open enrollment for seniors is starting October 15th and runs through December 7th. And here in Summit County, we have a lot of seniors who are 65 and older. So we want to just inform them of some educational meetings that are coming up.
So this is open enrollment for Medicare, right?
Yes. So every year they have a chance to make a change to their Medicare plan. So Thursday, October 1st, at the Park City Hospital, at 10 a.m. and 5 p.m., we're going to do educational meetings just informing them about Medicare basics. No sales materials, nothing will be presented, just basic information about Medicare so that they can make that decision. Those who are turning 65 this year don't have to come to open enrollment meetings, but it's good to get informed and learn more about what's going on in the area.
Okay, so that's happening Thursday. And then a second meeting you said is what?
Yes, so we're here in Park City on Wednesdays. So Wednesday, October 21st at 4 p.m. at the Peak Hotel, we're going to do a sales meeting, and that is to teach people more about the Medicare Advantage plans. Medicare Advantage plans are very popular. In 2006, they were enacted to kind of help people who are struggling with low income or people who just want to live healthy lifestyles that don't want to pay a lot in premium.
All right. So I'm not 65. I don't know anything about Medicare, except that I've been paying money into it for many, many years.
Correct.
So what do I get for all that money I've paid into it?
So basically, Part A you get for free. So that's an entitlement. Part A is your hospital benefit. Part B is your doctor and hospital benefit. And that's something you have to pay for once you turn 65. And that once you turn that on with Social Security, it costs about $104.90 a month for Part B. And then you have the option to either go with a Medicare supplement or go with a Medicare Advantage plan. Medicare Advantage plans are they're inexpensive in that there's zero premium or there's a $29 premium for those plans, and that's a monthly premium. So very affordable. It works like an employer plan. You pay co-payments, so $5 to see a primary care doctor, $40 to see a specialist under the $29 plan.
So what I would get, though, turning 65 is just if I needed to go into the hospital, everything would be paid for?
Well, basically, you make co-payments and co-insurance. So, yes. So, you'd have an out-of-pocket maximum on an Advantage plan at $4,900. So, realistically, you could say, I'm not going to go broke if I have some sort of catastrophic event. That's what the Advantage plans do, is they help seniors really to balance their money so they're not going broke paying medical bills.
All right. So, what is the Medicare year? Is it calendar?
A calendar year, yes. Open enrollment's October 15th through December 7th. And then the plan would start January 1st and run through December 31st.
So that's if you're turning 65 in 2015 or 2016?
There's different open enrollment dates, but if you're already on a Medicare Advantage plan, that's when you can change plans. So Summit County was affected last year, where there are a couple of companies that pulled out of Summit County and had to seniors were having to scramble and make changes. So every year they have the chance to make these changes. And one of the things that's very popular here is Silver Sneakers. With an Advantage plan, they get a free gym membership, and that Silver Sneakers gym membership gives them a chance to go to the rec centers here for free.
Okay, but again, I'm confused. So if I was to turn 65 in November.
Correct. You're in what they call your ICEP, which to me, that means your initial enrollment period into Medicare. And so you're able to enroll in a Medicare Advantage plan that would start the first of the month that you turn 65. But once you turn 65, then it goes to the calendar year where you can then enroll in a plan. Just like when you were working and you had open enrollment with a company, and Medicare gives you an open enrollment period.
Yeah. What if you miss an open enrollment?
Really, it's not a good idea. It's kind of catastrophic in that if you don't have prescription drug coverage, then you're penalized 1% a month of the average cost of a prescription drug plan. And that penalty is a lifetime penalty. So it's really important that people get out and learn more about Medicare and educate yourself.
So people who are maybe 60 could still show up at the meeting just
Absolutely.
To get more information?
Absolutely. And I encourage people to bring their children. A lot of times they have younger kids who are going to help them with their finances. Once in a while you meet with a financial advisor and they give you some advice. But I really feel like it's important that you get informed and so you learn more about it yourself.
Okay. Again, the first one is this Thursday. Right there at where you guys meet, in the meeting room?
Right in the meeting room, mm-hmm. Right, yep, at the Park City Hospital at 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. They're welcome to come. That's just a Medicare Basics class. If they want to learn more about a Medicare Advantage plan, it's at the Peak Hotel on October 21st at 4 p.m.
Do you need to register or just show up?
You can just show up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No, Sherry Giles. I'm an independent agent, so I would love to reach out and talk to people. If they have want to reach me, they can call me at 801-487-2300.
Okay. Sherry, thanks.
All right. Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:50. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Well, coming up this Friday night, independent ski racer Megan McJames hosting a fundraiser to raise the funds for her upcoming training, travel, and competition expenses. She joins me now in the studio. Good morning, Megan.
Good morning, Leslie.
So when and where?
So it's this Friday evening, 6 to 9 p.m. At the 2002 Silver and Bronze Rooms at Park City Mountain Resort. And it's just a big party to raise funds for me to race Giant Slalom World Cup next season. So we hired live music with the Motherlode Canyon Band, and we've got a silent auction, a bar, heavy appetizers, that kind of thing.
Okay, cash bar?
Yep.
Yeah. How do you get into the room? These are the ones access off to the parking garage, is that right?
Yes. So it's the condominiums at the base of the resort. It's in that building. If you go to the ice skating rink and go in the condominiums there, you'll find it. We'll have some signs leading. But yeah, it's the 2002 Silver and Bronze Rooms.
Okay. So getting in is free. There's no charge, or are you charging?
Nope, it's free to get in. I want as many people to come and celebrate as possible. And then we'll have the cash bar and the silent auction. And then you can always make a tax-deductible donation, which will go directly to my ski expenses.
Great. So tell us about some of the silent auction items that you've got.
So we've got everything from skis and tons of ski gear to jewelry and cookbooks. So there's a ton of different stuff. We have about 25 different items. So I'm hoping people will come and shop and find something they like.
Great, right. So how much do you need to raise to get yourself through the season?
So I'm hoping to raise about $10,000, and that will finish off my budget to get me all the way through the whole World Cup season and to the end of the year.
All right, so you have qualified to ski World Cup?
Yes, so I have a World Cup Giant Slalom spot for the whole year, and I got that through... I was in the NORAM overall last year. So basically it's my spot. Nobody else can use it. And so I have the starts now. I just have to pay to get myself there.
Yeah. So what have you got? Do you have a coach, or do you try and hook up with other people to share expenses, or?
Both. I'm working with a bunch of different teams this year. I'm excited. It's going to be a lot easier. The last couple of years, it was the Olympics and the World Championship. And I'm excited for this year just to focus on World Cup and improve my ranking there. And I think it's going to be a little bit lower stress without some of those details surrounding the championships event. So I'm really excited.
Yeah. So who do you use for a coach?
So my boyfriend, Cody Marshall, helps me with coaching. And then when I'm at World Cups, I'll work in with the U.S. team. I'll be representing USA at the World Cups.
Oh, okay. Great.
So, yeah.
Right. So what would it take for you to get reinstated back to the U.S. ski team?
You know, I'm not sure. It's not one of my goals necessarily. If it happens, it happens. But my biggest goal this year is to improve my World Cup rank in the world.
So where are you at?
I'm 44th in the world at GS, and I'd like to move into the top 30.
Okay. And doing so means what? I mean, to get into that top 30, it's...
So to improve your world rank, you basically have to get top 30 in these World Cup events. So first is you have to be able to start, which I can do that. And now I just have to start getting in the top 30 more consistently.
Yeah. The course is a lot better, those top 30 places. Is that part of the reason for getting up there? And then also because of the flip or?
Yeah. So once you get in the top 30, it's better because you can start earlier, which the course is better. And also they do flip the top 30. So 30th place will start first on the second run. But the other thing about the top 30 is only the top 30 at World Cup gets World Cup points, which is how the World Cup rank is decided.
Okay. So you've had to have a couple of top 30 places to get even into the 44th position, yeah?
Yes. I have been top 30 before, but I'm hoping to be more consistent with that this year.
Okay. So what have you been doing this summer to get ready?
So I spent 5 weeks in Mount Hood. I was doing a lot of coaching. And then I just got back from Chile, and they had a really great snow year down there, so I was training. I switched to vocal skis, and I've been working out really hard. So I feel prepared, and I'm really excited for the upcoming season, and I hope we have some good snow here.
Yeah, so when you change skis, is that always kind of a scary thing to do?
Yes, it was a risk, but I just got back from Chile, and I love this equipment, so right. It was a good risk.
Okay. Again, so. Friday night, 6 to 9, there at Park City Mountain Resort in the, tell me again, the Silver and Bronze Room?
2002 Silver and Bronze Room. I hope to see everyone there.
Okay. Megan, good luck.
Thank you, Leslie.
It's Megan McJames.